IRS on the Road, value-based parenting and life balance ideas from world-traveling family coaches. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
Hello, and welcome back to IRS Way on the Road.
Way IRS on the mountain.
We are on a huge mountain in Switzerland. It is absolutely stunning here. I can't even explain to you how gorgeous it is.
Well, if you try to imagine a postcard of the Swiss Alps, and then you see a little teeny dot down in the postcard, that's Linda looking up.
Yeah, for sure. And we have had the best time. We have a son and daughter-in-law and a granddaughter here who actually, our daughter-in-law inherited this little hut from her grandfather, great-grandfather. And they have finally procured it and remodeled it. And they have done a spectacular job.
Oh, it's amazing.
Job.
It's just amazing. And as many of you may know, a lot of European countries, especially Switzerland, they don't want a summer home. They don't want some big mansion. They want a hut. They call it a hut. They like it a hut. A lot of them don't have running water. This one does. A lot of them don't have electricity. This one does. But they like to get out into the woods, out into the mountains where they can, it's almost like camping.
It is. But we are actually right in the middle of, which sounds weird, but they have now put a ski resort over the top of this this sweet little hut.
Which
and
makes
a lot
it even
of
better.
On the hill, which makes it
here.
Better. We can come back and forth. But it is the best resort, according to the plaques downstairs at the bottom, the very best ski resort in Switzerland. And then there's, for 10 years, and there's another same 10 years where they also got the award of being the best ski resort in the world.
If we've got you curious, look it up. FLIMS. It's FLIMS. It's like films, only with the I and the L reversed. It's FLIMS. And we're just loving it here. Some of you are going to say, wow, you Irish, you've got one son on Maui and you've got another son in Switzerland. And we're like, yeah, and don't anybody suggest they move back to Utah because...
No, this one never will because Anita, our daughter-in-law, grew up here in FLIMS, actually. She's had a poster of FLIMS on her bedroom floor since she was a 14-year-old.
So our son Tal and I were saying we both sort of adopted our wife's hometown as our sort of family place. And for Tal, it's FLIMS in the Alps in Graubünden province in Switzerland. And for me, it's Bear Lake, Idaho.
You lucky guy. So we are just having the best time. We can't even explain what we look out.
This is where this needs to be YouTube.
Gorgeous.
Oh my gosh. We're looking out three windows now and it's just Alps all the way around us. Oh, and there's a couple of hang gliders.
Just yeah, there's always hang gliders up here.
Soaring down into it.
And tons of people on bikes that take the, what would you even call it? It's not a ski lift, it's a bike lift.
Oh, it's a big gondola. They ride up to the top and then they can ride all the way down.
A 10-person gondola.
Yeah.
We came up today with at least 60 bike riders.
Yeah.
Not in the same
gondola.
But we are having so much fun. We're really thrilled.
And we're here just mainly, of course, to be with our son and his family, but also it's just really tying into all of our thinking and what we're trying to do with the second half of life and how often people, as they move into this, what we call the second half, this sort of re-examination of life. And I mean, I guess in the negative, you'd call it a midlife crisis, but in the positive, you'd call it really learning what matters and really deciding to live life according to the things that are truly important, not the things that you work most of the first half by necessity, trying to gain, trying to get to, and so on. And it's going to be a fun discussion today because the first part here, Linda and I are going to try to, we've been throwing around that term for a lot of podcasts, and many of you are sort of wondering what exactly do the IRS mean when they say the second half of life? And we want to define that a little more tightly in our minds and in you as listeners. And then the second half of the show, I'm just going to get Tal, our 46-year-old son, who I think in many ways And I mean this as the most profound kind of compliment. I think Tal has moved in to what we call the second half, with the priorities and the perspective and some of the good things that most people don't gain until much later in life. He's moved into it early, which in a way is the juxtaposition of me, and I won't speak for you, because you've always kind of been a second half gal, honey, because your priorities have always been so clear, and you know intuitively things that other people have to figure out over a
I wouldn't say
lifetime.
that, but
But speaking for myself, one reason I'm really spearheading doing this course on how to live the second half is because I don't know if the right word is, I'm a little embarrassed and I'm a little chagrined and I'm a little disappointed in myself that it took me as long as it did to sort of move into what I'm now calling the second half. I lived by the rules and the sort of priorities, and I lived by the first half a little too long. I should have made the transition
honey,
sooner, and I'd like other people to have the chance to make it
honey,
sooner.
honey, I don't think you've ever lived by the rules.
Well, don't say that.
I have said that, and I believe that. I mean, you've lived
You've just got that on
a
your
very
mind because
unique
you talked
life.
to one of our missionaries from England who said a very interesting thing to you the other day. You know what I'm talking about? Elder Parker.
Yes, I think I know what you're talking about.
I left that we were welcoming these missionaries in England way back when, and I left the room for a minute, and what happened?
They were just a young group of missionaries, and we were pretty young ourselves. And he was such a exciting, so excited about this, but he was gonna do this mission just like he does life, with just lots of enthusiasm and lots of great ideas and lots of things that they may never heard of. So
So I left the
he
room
left the
and
room, and then I just said, "You guys, you have no idea what you're in for." And he
this
remembered
missionary
that.
has remembered that for 50
50
years.
years, man. Well, not maybe quite 50, but
Almost, well, 40 something.
yeah.
But anyway, Linda, what, I mean, you're, again, a lot of this is new to me. I'm figuring out by analysis, but you are intuitively a person with the right sensibilities and instincts and intuitions. What, and you, and we're married and we live this together and we're trying to figure this out together. What do we mean when we say the second half of life?
Well, I think everybody does start at a different age, feeling like they're at the second half of life. You want to feel young for as long as you can. But we do have another son that, as you mentioned earlier, when we were chatting with this son, that there are, it seems like he's been in the second half of life for a long time, even though he's
Well,
not.
I think Jonah, it's interesting you bring him up. I think he
He's
really
not
moved
50
into the
yet.
second half when he was 35.
Yeah, I think he did.
Now let's describe what we mean by that. So what are we talking about? Second half. What is it? What is it?
Well, it's just a new discovery, a new way of thinking about your life, a new way of going forward, and maybe making up your own rules and the things that you want to do with your life, and so instead of other people.
And maybe some examples. I mean, I think what are the hallmarks of what we're calling the second half? I think it's when people truly, not just what they want to do or what's ideal, but when they truly begin to value relationships more than achievements. I think it's when they truly begin to, I'll do a little alliteration here. It's when they move away from achievements and power toward awareness and perspective. There's a little A and P, right? In the first half, A and P is achievement and power and trying to gain wealth and trying to, and we're not critical of that. The first half is necessary. It's where you need to be. And I'll try another alliteration, but then it changes to where you value more your awareness and your perspective. It's a movement from the outer to the inner. It's a movement from doing to being, to a focus on more on being, right?
Right.
Another alliteration might be the tools of the first half are work and plan, and there doesn't, I mean, we need to carry that over into the second half, but in a different way, where it's more like the biblical admonition of Christ, watch and pray.
Right.
In other words, it's not about you anymore. It's not about your agenda. It's about God's agenda, or about the agenda of those you love. It's a movement into a new kind of consciousness. And we say the second half not to say, oh, if you're going to live to be 90, then you need to make the jump when you're 45. It's not a numeric thing. And this, and frankly, Linda, it does require the second half. If you want to set up your own goals and your own rules and pursue the things you want, not the things the world might dictate to you, let's face it, you have to have at least a certain modicum of health. You have to be strong enough to do it. You can't move into the second half if you're an invalid or if you've lost all of your physical and mental power. So you have to have some of that left, at least. And let's be brutally frank, you have to have some financial freedom. You can't just say, okay, I'm not going to worry about work anymore. You have to find a way to do that. But in the case of our son Jonah, who likes to say, maybe this is my paraphrase of what he says, but essentially, there's two ways to be financially independent. One is to have unlimited resources, and the other one is to have very limited needs. And this couple at about age 35, and we're proud of them for this, although we don't suggest everyone should do this. It depends on...
Probably very few. Yeah,
yeah, but they basically decided that they could be financially independent by extremely limited needs, and they live a very simple life, a life that's built around...
Not making money.
It's built around recycling, and it's built around driving cars that run on vegetable oil, and it's built around very few needs, and it's built around lots of kids staying in one room, and that gives him this freedom.
Readers should know, though, that he did have a very good job in construction for a while, so they have a nice nest egg that they can always rely on.
Yeah.
I don't know that you can do that before you feel a little bit financially independent.
Right, right. But it can mean such different things to different people, right? I mean, they decided to limit their needs so severely that they now felt like now we can do what we want.
Yeah, and they
do. In
terms
of our character.
They do whatever they want, which is so fun to watch. Yeah. They're so interesting.
So wouldn't you say that they really moved into the second half at about age 35?
It could be. I can calculate exactly when, but I do think that you come to a time in life when you decide what your ideas are, not just what you've learned
what
through your
matters.
Life or what the media is teaching you or whatever's
what
happening.
What your peers are doing.
You decide who you really are, what you really believe, what you're really going for. And then you can, with that confidence, you can go into the next phase of life, although not that you can't change.
Yeah.
I mean,
we've
all changed as we've gone through life, and we think, whoa, how did I think of that when I was 30 or 40? Or
right, right.
Even 50. I mean, we do have to, it's a completely open, completely always changing.
And again, I really think I waited too long to make that move. And that's, and that, what you just said, honey, is so good, because the fact that Jonah and Asia were in Las Vegas building $20 million homes and the movement from that to their really simplified lifestyle was pretty dramatic, but it gave them a chance to move into the second half.
Yeah, not many people can do that, but we are so proud of him. He really did do it. And he's so fun to talk to because he's so confident in who he is that it's remarkable.
Now, for the second half of the show, I'm going to interview another son of ours, the one that we're here visiting in Switzerland. So why don't you, since I'm going to do that interview, Linda, just give your own introduction of Tal. How would you describe
Tal? Oh, gosh. Tal is such a treasure in our family, too. I mean, don't you just love your kids? I mean, we sound so proud, and we kind of are. But they all teach you so much. When they reach a certain age and you realize they're teaching you more than you're teaching them, then you realize it's so great. But Wow, he is 6'9" to start out with, big basketball player all through college and high school and college, and now he has moved permanently because his wife's family still lives here, and her mother is ill and aging, and so it really has been so interesting to see him make this change, and now they have a beautiful daughter. Not that they haven't tried for more.
But you've described Jonah as a mystic.
Jonah, yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm and Tal.
And
You've
now
described
Tal's
Tal
kind of a
as a
mystic too. I
mystic.
don't know. That's something
What
to
do
be
you mean when
decided,
you
but
say that, though?
he just has really extra sensory perception of a lot of things,
And
of
what?
spiritual things,
Yeah.
of what movie should make next, and what he should and he attaches to things that are
Yeah,
really
yeah.
exciting. And things that people say, he loves quoting people, he loves reading poetry, he loves reciting poetry. He really is a very unique soul. So I think you're going to enjoy meeting him.
So we're going to take a brief break. I'll come back on and with a little interview with Tal, and we'll probe the second half of life.
Be right back.
Welcome back to Ayers on the Road. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
And we're back on Ayers on the Road. Welcome into the studio. The studio happens to be your hut high in the Alps of Switzerland, Talmadge Iyer.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be back.
Now, Tal, we've been talking in the first half about the second half of life, and I made the somewhat outrageous claim that I'm late getting to my second half. I wish I'd moved into it sooner, defined as more relationships, more inner than outer, more doing than more being than doing, you know,
Yeah,
more
yeah.
awareness and perspective, not so much accomplishment and power. But I made the audacious claim that you're 46 and you're on the doorstep of the second half right now. I see that as a compliment. Do you?
I think it's a compliment for sure. I mean, I would love to jump into the second half as soon as possible. I was thinking about it before we jumped on, and I think the pandemic had an effect on me because it slowed everything down and had me really think about what's important in life, and I started really thinking in different ways.
I didn't think of that, but that the timing on that was really interesting for you, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Suddenly you weren't at the office every day and you weren't working 14-hour days. You were home and you were able to be with your daughter. Is that when you first decided to ride dad mode?
Yeah, I did some writing of dad mode during that time. And I also went up to just a few years ago, maybe it was after the pandemic, but I went up the up Lake Zurich and went to the home of the Swiss psychiatrist Carl Jung.
Oh yeah.
And I got to see his place, his office where he would have his patients, where he did a lot of different work there, and he is the one who a lot of people say he's the one who's coined that first and second half of life. I'm sure a lot of people have talked about it, but he made it pretty famous. So he, I kind of was wanting to learn more about it from him.
So how would you and Carl Jung, how would you sort of differentiate first half, second half? I oversimplified, I know, because it's a big subject, but how would you distinguish the two?
Well, I did a little look at that online before, and I like what I found. It basically says first half of life, the focus is establishing identity and adapting to the external world. And so the tasks are building the ego, developing a career, forming relationships, achieving goals, and integrating into society. But then the second half, according to Jung, is about inner development and individuation. So the tasks are turning inward, confronting the conscious, integrating integrating repressed or undeveloped parts of the self, like the shadow, and finding deeper meaning or spiritual fulfillment.
you talk a lot about on your podcast, and let me just throw that out right now. Tal has a wonderful podcast called Create Your Own Stories with Tal Iyer. And you've heard us mention that before on our podcast here. And by the way, you ought to listen to the current one because it's a crossover where Tal and two of his brothers who do the one podcast and then four of his sisters do another one. And this brings the two together. And what you're talking about on there is this thing you call shadow work. You know, when I was a kid growing up in college, we called it tea groups. Okay. We sat in a circle and everyone... And it was vulnerability. It was like, tell me what you really think of me. And it was because it was a group and people would just jump on you. And, yes. you know, yes. it was very traumatic for a lot of people. I actually loved it because it was brought about so much self-awareness. I think you like your shadow work done a little more privately and intimately than that.
I think I got a little of that from you. I do like it. I mean, I'm trying to train myself to like it. When I hear something, especially from my spouse, which is probably the best source of shadow yeah. work a lot of the time, I used to really push back on it, and I still do. I'm not saying I've got it figured out, but sometimes if I'm in a good space, I can actually say, "Tell me more about that."
You can say, "Ouch," but go ahead.
Yes.
So was it Carl Jung who had the pair? No, it was an Aesop's fable, wasn't it?
Yes.
Tell
yes.
that real quick. That's what made me really understand it.
Yeah, so there's this Aesop's fable that we read at the breakfast table with our daughter a few times, and it stuck with me, and it helps me explain shadow work to people. But it's basically where it says, every man or woman carries two bags about them, one in the front and one in the back. The bag in the front is full of their neighbor's faults, and the one in the back is full of their own faults.
Their neighbor's faults, where they can see them.
Yes, so it is that we're very good at seeing others' faults, but very bad at seeing our own faults, because we've got that bag behind us. And that's exactly what shadow work is. And I have a rudimentary understanding of it. I haven't dug into it as much as I'd like, but I do think that I know enough to know that it is trying to identify those faults, those things that others can see, our spouse can see, but we can't see.
And not only faults, but trying to really see the real you, which during the first half may have been, you know, swept under the rug because you want the you to be the presentation you want to make to get yeah. ahead and accomplish your goals and so on. So I hate to use an overused word, but authenticity is one way to describe what we're trying to get to in the second half, right?
Yes.
We want to be our real selves.
Well, check this out. What else he says here? This ties right in. I love this famous quote of Carl Jung. It says, "We cannot live the afternoon of life according to the program of life's morning." And then he says, "This shift, if ignored, can lead to a midlife crisis. But if embraced, it enables individuation, the process of becoming one's true self."
Isn't that interesting? So the negative view of this shift that happens in midlife is a midlife crisis. The positive interpretation is a midlife enlightenment. It's a time when we
yes.
really figure
yes.
out who
yes.
we are
exactly.
and what we want to be. And again, I've said this before on this podcast and in the write-up about the second half of life. I stayed in the first half too long, and part of it was because I thought I was pretty good at it. I was writing books. I was going on book tours. I was doing media. I was promoting things. I knew how to do it. And we speak to so many CEOs now, Tal, who, you know, they're in their 70s, but they're still living like they were 40. They're still, I got to start a new company.
Yep.
I got to
yep.
make this company better.
Yep.
I got to get some private equity. And they do it not because they still love it, but because it's all they know how to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And it takes a certain amount of courage to say, maybe I've got another 20 years. Do I want to live them just like I lived the last 60, or do I want to live them a little differently? And it gets back to Socrates, you know, do the unexamined life. I mean, I don't know if he realized when he said that, that I wonder, it would have been interesting to ask Socrates, what percent of people really examine their lives and what percent just go on, you know, whatever life gives them, that's where they stay.
Yes. And I do have to sound a word of caution as well, though, because doing this work, and it really is work, and really examining and looking at ourselves is difficult. And depending on the ability that I have, there's some days where I don't feel up to it because it's maybe I'm not feeling super good about certain things in my life, and I can't do it. So I do think that we need to be cautious about it, but also I think it's a wonderful way to improve our spirituality and really open up a whole new aspect of life.
Now, you brought up the pandemic, but I'm thinking even a little deeper than that about how sometimes a crisis, not a midlife crisis brought about by your own ego, but a crisis of some exterior nature like the pandemic.
Yeah.
And let's be a little personal here. I mean, I don't think you'll mind. I mean, you lost your job. Your company downsized, and you found, and you'd been working in Switzerland for what, 8 years?
8 years, yeah.
And you were on a track. You'd turned down a couple of promotions because you kind of liked what you were doing, but the company got in trouble, downsized. Suddenly, there you are with what could have, and what was traumatic in a lot of ways, but again, I'm a dad, I'm a little prejudiced, but my view is you turned that into the bridge into your second half of life. It was right after that crisis that you became a published author. You wrote this beautiful book, Dad Mode, which if you listeners haven't heard of, just jump on Amazon right now. Dad Mode is the best dad book in the world, according to this prejudiced dad. But you started a podcast, you began doing seminars, and Anita, your wife, began doing personal coaching. And you're out there doing the stuff you feel deeply and that you love, which is the hallmark of the second half.
Yes, yes. I think the person who really brought me to that, I really got into this Father Richard Rohr, who's a Franciscan priest, and he wrote a book called Falling Upward. If anybody wants to read, think a little bit more about this topic, he does a great job of talking about what Jung taught him. And then he has a little bit different view of it. He says, these two halves of life offer a profound insights into emphasizing spiritual maturity, inner transformation, and deeper connection with the divine. And so it's a wonderful, I really highly recommend that book.
What do you say to someone who's just listening right now and they're like, you know, I'm just too tired to start over. I don't want some second life. I'm just going to fade out. I'm the one I'm living. I've done my thing. I'm going to go play golf or whatever. I mean, what I want to say to that person is you're missing some real excitement there. If you have a little financial freedom and a little health freedom, if you're not completely laid up or completely broke, and as we said in the first half, Tal, you got a brother who became financially independent, not by making money, but by basically deciding he didn't need anything, you know?
Yeah.
And so the question is, in just the last couple of minutes that we've got here, puts you on the spot a little, because I've just given you as a great example of someone moving into the second half way before I, as your father did. But what's your, talk to people your age out there, and they're in the middle of life numerically.
Yeah.
What should they be doing?
Well, as a 46-year-old, I think you really can enter into the second half of life around 50 if you're lucky. Maybe some people do it a little earlier. But I would say to them, it's the most exciting adventure, and it's two halves. Let's make a whole here. We're looking for wholeness, and it's the most exciting thing. And I'd say also think about the relationships that you have in your life, because that will, first of all, if you deepen the relationship you have with yourself and understand and make connections with your story, you're ready to also connect more deeply with those around you. And so that would be more important than making millions and you know, starting the next business. But it doesn't have to be one or the other. You can do a little of both.
And we're not throwing the first half under the bus. We're saying that got us to where we can now move into the second half. But let's not squander that opportunity. And so when I get a chance to introduce Tal, which I've done a few times when he's speaking, I always say, I just look at Tal as a new improved version of myself. And that's how I do think of you, Tal. And so thanks for joining. And I'm the old guy, you're the young guy, but we're both moving into the second half. So hats off to you. And you listeners, find your time and make the move into the second half of life.
Thanks for having me on.
Glad to have you. See you next time on Ayers on the Road.